It's okay. It's okay. He won't hurt us. He would have killed me by now. Okay? I think it's because we're not actually part of the movie. He doesn't really know what to do with us.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another movie podcast. I'm Oscar, and with me today is...
Oscar's co-host, Raphael.
Do I have to introduce you that way?
No, but I felt like I needed to introduce myself.
You just can't do anything normal. That's basically what it boils down to.
Yes.
Like, if I do a normal introduction, you will come up and pretend to be somebody else or play on words about it or something.
Probably vaudevillian, but yes.
Okay, that's good. We just learned about our vaudevillian.
Sort of.
That Bryce chick.
Sort of.
Sort of, right, yeah. Okay. So, hello, everyone. This is episode number 70. And if you're, this is the first time you're listening to us, you should know that, that's based on the title, we review movies here. And we're going to be doing three movies as we do every, you know, as a bi-weekly show. And the three movies today are going to be The Lego Movie 2, the second part, a movie called Can You Ever Forgive Me, which Melissa McCarthy is starring. And originally it was going to be Shoplifters.
Shouldn't it be Can You Ever Forgive Me?
Did I say Will You?
No. Isn't it? But there's a question mark at the end, right?
Yeah, can you ever, fine. Can you ever forgive me?
There you go. That's a little better.
I mean Jesus.
I just was asking.
Just saying. I mean, I guess you're right. I mean,
there's proper punctuation, Oscar.
Yeah, and that movie's all about writing and punctuation, right? So we were going to do Shoplifters, as I was saying, but we instead chose the Netflix original Dan Gilroy movie, Velvet Buzzsaw, which is getting a lot of buzz for a buzzsaw.
Wow.
Come on.
That's the only word you can come up with?
No. It just came up in a second. It's not like...
By the way.
I was trying to find a pun or something.
You like?
What is it?
It's one of those ice cube molds.
Molds.
The big cubes, so it melts slower.
Oh, you know, my mom got me off track here. The special glass with like this rubber thing inside it, so like you would freeze it with water on one end, and then you take out the divider, and then you pour whiskey or whatever. That way it doesn't melt.
Well, she should have given that to me. I drink way more whiskey than you do.
Well, I would... Yeah, you do. But also, like, I don't have access to my freezer as much as... they because I have to leave it upstairs. My little mini fridge isn't going to... Okay, anyway. Small problem.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I was saying, we're going to be doing Velvet Buzzsaw, and those are the three movies we're going to be reviewing. If you want to find out how you can find this show and other show, we have a website, otherpodcast.com. You can find everything we've done there, which include bonus episodes. Bonus episodes, how they work is very simple. If this is your first time.
It's just a bonus episode. That's it. That's all you have to know. It's one movie.
It's one review.
You know, I saw how I cut them off, guys. All right. So it's one movie. Mm-hmm. All right. That's it. We only talk about the one. We say brief introductions.
Once a month
at best.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's all we really do.
Yes.
And, we pick usually something big enough for we want to entice you to get it.
Yeah, or something that I can see, like, in the schedules coming up, we won't be able to get to it. I'll put it as a bonus.
Something like that.
And the way it works is that if you donate to our show, again, you can find that at our website, otherpodcast.com. Anyone who donates to the show gets that bonus episode this month. Everyone else gets it 5 months down later, 5 months later down the road. And this month, 5 months ago, I should say, this time, we reviewed The Predator. So that was, what was it, October? I don't remember anymore. Probably September, actually. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We review The Predator. That's coming out later on this month, so check that out. And the new bonus episode for this month, for those who donate, is going to be Alita Battle Angel, which is Robert Rodriguez's latest. So, and I hear pretty good things about it. I haven't heard anything bad particularly about it.
It's only on El Rey Network. No, I'm just kidding.
so nobody can watch it. Right, no one's going to
see it. That was a joke.
You have to buy like this huge cable package
you
to
really
get that
do, because you can't get that check. Yeah.
So that's how bonus episode works. Another thing we do here on the show is marathons. Marathons are very simple. We choose a topic, usually a director or a genre or even like a weird question or an actor. It doesn't matter what we do. We choose something. And based on that, all three of us, normally we have another co-host. His name is Luke, but he works a lot away from the city. So we don't get to have him as much. We started with him, the latest one, which is a Steven Spielberg marathon. We went in order. We each chose, what, three or four? Four, right?
Yes.
A bunch of movies. And which,
no, we picked eras, so we picked our favorites. Yeah, four.
Four, right? Mm-hmm. And we decided to go in chronological order instead of like trading off between our picks. So we just kind of went to kind of like that. So we started with Duel. We just did a Schindler's List last year, one of our last shows there. And this is where I came up with something, Ralph. I want to talk to you about this kind of a news notification about us. Is that what do you think about doing the Spielberg marathon, which is a marathon that was started with all three of us in the room. Since Luke is not available most of the year nowadays, what if we only do that marathon when he's here?
That makes sense.
And then we can do our own separate marathon when he's not around. Because I know that he's probably not into the weirder marathons we might end up doing. And that way we can still have marathon content while still not interrupting the one he started with us.
All right. Well, you better have a good one to start with. To
I don't have one ready. I don't have a pitch for you. I was pitching the idea of doing that.
Okay. You better come up with a good pitch one.
Well, how about we talk about it? And then we can both agree on something.
No, you just come up with something, then we'll talk about it.
All right, I guess. That sounds fine. It sounds like you want to give me all the responsibility, but I'm like, I kind of want it. I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So check out our website again. That's how you find out previous marathons we've done. We did an animation marathon, a classics marathon, and so on. So last but not least here, before we get into our first review, which will be the Lego Movie, we have something called Recent Discoveries, which is pretty self-explanatory. Recent Discoveries is something we've seen in the interim between the last episode, independent from each other. Raf, you do not have anything right now, right? Oh, you do?
No. Right. I've been watching TV, guys. Yeah, sorry.
Right.
Just a lot of TV shows.
So, yeah, I mean, sometimes we do bring up TV here. Obviously, if you looked at our archives, we've done top 10 TV shows, for example, because, you know, there's more movies in life and there's a lot of media out there. A lot of arts out there. So, but yeah, we typically talk about just movies. So I only have one for you guys. It's Green Book. Been catching up with some of those nominated movies, see what they're all about, see if it's worth it. Maybe one or two I'll never watch, but this was one I saw. It's still in theaters. A working-class Italian-American bouncer becomes the driver of an African-American classical pianist on a tour of venues throughout the 1960s American South. And they go pretty deep south in this one. And it stars Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali, also Linda Cardellini and Sebastian Maniscalco, and Dmitry Maronov. He plays one of the instrumentalists, whatever they call them. Well, the funny thing is that this movie was directed by Peter Farrelly. You know that name?
Sounds familiar.
The Farrelly brothers. They did movies like Dumb and Dumber and There's Something About Mary.
Oh, wow.
Not funny?
I've seen both those movies.
Yes. Well, I named the top two.
Yeah, I've
heard. That I know you have definitely seen. And this is, apparently, it's written by him as well. And Brian Hayes Curie. And Nick Vallelonga. Nick Vallelonga is the name of the Viggo Mortensen character, by the way. Viggo Mortensen's character wrote the book on these events.
Right.
And like an autobiography or
something. Also,
yes.
He's also an immigrant in the movie, am I correct? Or second generation or first generation?
Something like that, maybe. Right? I'm not sure about that. I don't know if they mention it, but I think they did, yeah.
Basically, also a technically... never mind. I forgot what I was going to say.
Okay, that's okay. It does remind me, though, when I was watching the movie. By the way, you know, I won't mention what it reminded me of. It's too long-winded. But I will say that this movie is fine. It is the Hidden Figures of this year. You know what I'm saying? And that's okay. I would say Hidden Figures is more entertaining. I remember having more fun. But Green Book is not without its entertainment, for sure. Viggo Mortensen is a character that is very... you know, like Joe Blow kind of guy, like very, you know, your man's man kind of guy, kind of old fashioned. It's the 60s, of course, so that goes without saying. So all the Italian stereotypes are kind of there. He eats a lot. Oh my God, the movie loves watching him eat and putting food in front of that guy.
Really?
He just fucking downs buckets of chicken and shit. Like, he just down. At one point, to make money, to make rent, he does a hot dog eating contest. This is before he actually meets Mahershala Ali. Things like that. So he's a character with a capital C. And then obviously opposite, he's like The Odd Couple. Mm-hmm. Mahershala Ali's character is the opposite. He's never eaten fried chicken, things like that. They mentioned that in the trailer, I think.
Yeah.
You know, very kind of stuffy, very prim, very proper, clearly a classical pianist type. And when he first meets him, he's wearing this weird getup. I can't even describe it. So, you know, it's a fine movie. It's a road trip movie. As far as road trip movies go, there are way better ones, but there are also way worse ones.
Okay.
And this movie meets the level requirement for Oscars not looking too racist, basically, I feel like.
Okay.
You know, to be perfectly blunt about
it. It's still good, right?
It's still good. Their acting is pretty good. I mean, I don't see why Viggo was nominated. I would not see that. His acting is good, don't get me wrong, but he should have won for that movie he did with Cronenberg or something, you know, History of Violence or something.
Oh, like, I thought you were going to say Eastern Promises.
Oh, that one. I think he was nominated for that one, actually. Eastern Promises is also a better performance.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think he not got nominated. Never mind.
Yeah, but he didn't win, though.
Right. Or History of Violence was good, though. He should have got nominated.
Or even Lord of the Rings, you know. I would accept that over... Actually, no, I wouldn't. But anyway, and the movie's fine. Like I said, it's fine. I don't know why I've nominated it so many times, but I did see it for that reason. But it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. It's not cringeworthy. It is very sentimental, but it is not too sentimental. That's the best way I can describe it. So Green Book, check it out. It's a fun family movie to watch with people, friends, family. So recommend it for that for sure. I saw it alone, so that was great. But the audience was pretty cool with me. All right, so that's Green Book. And that's all I've been watching. Ralph, you don't have anything, so that's recent discoveries. We're going to get into now our first review of the evening, which will be... Oh, wait. I lied. I'm actually going to keep this in the thing here. I almost forgot about something. I want to talk about news. There's two news articles, Rob. I
totally forgot about this.
One, we'll talk about the Oscar thing first. So, I told you briefly before we started recording that the Oscar nominations announced that they will not be airing 4 of what they usually show as far as the nomination and the winners are going to be.
Yeah.
It's 4. I mean, I don't have the article in front of me, but the 4 I remember is the shorts. It's one of the shorts one, I think live action shorts, makeup and hairstyle, and which... To a small degree, I kind of understand, but at the same time, bro, they deserve recognition too. The top two, best editing and best cinematography. So the shooting and the cutting, which is how a movie is made, by the way, are
cut out,
being ignored, and they're going to be shown. The winners are going to be shown throughout commercial breaks, like in between, like in right after the commercial is about to start or right before or whatever. Yeah, they might as well put it like. As a bottom NBC, like, premiering a new show, you know. What do you think about that?
Did I talk to you off air or on air about how they shooting themselves? It was on air. How they shot themselves in the foot because they're Hollywood?
Yes.
They just shot the other foot. You're supposed to take stands for certain things.
Yes.
You can't have your cake... Or whatever.
The stupid expression is making sense because how will you not buy a cake if you're not going to eat it?
Right. You can't have everything and share everything and make everyone happy.
They're trying to, the thing is that they're trying to please everyone. They're doing what like 90s studios used to do. I mean, they still kind of do it today, but a lot less of it. Where they try to appease everyone. By doing, it's like, you know, it's like a Netflix, it's like they work like a Netflix algorithm. Oh, you like Kevin Spacey, you like political thrillers, and they make a show of that. That's how House of Cards started. It's like they did that.
Right.
You know?
Because they did that, they're alienating themselves. You're making yourself your own facade. At this point, you're not taking yourself serious enough to say, no, we're the Academy Awards, and... We need to. The whole purpose we're here is for this. It's this long. It's that long. If it takes that long to recognize the length of a movie or the length of a little bit longer than a movie or two movies put together, then it takes the length of two movies put together because we're recognizing hundreds of movies, you know, or whatever that have made the Academy Awards. Literally, I just pitched their fucking line for them to keep it. And that's how you say it in social media.
Right. I mean,
news everywhere.
People can understand hand is that's their stance. Why would they change it?
And then people would
else?
Be like, oh my God, you're right. Why are we complaining about something
like,
that takes
so
long? Like,
if not complaining, there's so many colored people in the stands.
Right.
And they're like, okay, let's make it all white now. I'm like, no.
Right.
Don't
right.
listen to, what
right.
the hell?
We should bring all the, you know what? I think we're going to put all the ugly people, right? That, and I say ugly people as in all the regular people that, you know, are in the upstairs.
Yeah.
All those regular people that come in or the families. We're going to put them downstairs, front and center, and we're going to put all the stars in the upstairs. And we'll just have them walk a little longer. Fuck it. Why not? Well, they should be up there. Why can't they get the limelight?
Yeah, exactly. It's this is so strange. It's like they put a bad spotlight on themselves and they made themselves to be – it's like they're asking to be bullied too about it.
They
like
are.
They're just making
themselves
weaker in stance.
They got bullied into this situation.
It's so important, the editing and it's so important.
They got bullied into the situation.
Just last year.
I hope the editors edit their way back into this Academy.
They just fuck up the editing. The shooter keeps drifting away. Like the camera keeps like, panning away from
cinematographer just keeps like going to other visual cues or something.
Right. Anything. That'd be like showing Tom Cruise picking his nose or something.
Yes.
That'd be funny. Which there's a whole science to that, by the way. They keep track of that so they won't show accidentally something. Well, they try to anyway.
Yeah, I know. No, I know there is.
I've been to those kind of rooms and booths, how they manage everything. It's live on
TV. Like a war
on
room.
Air is,
it's a war room. Yeah.
It's insane. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Very cool. I mean, very bad, but very cool that we're talking about it. It's a travesty, for real. Just last year, Roger Deakins won for Best Cinematographer. Don't get me wrong. The guy shouldn't do public speaking. He looks high as fuck. That's not the point. Point is that he's recognized for all the amazing shooting that guy fucking did and has done, finally, over the many years. If he had won this year, we wouldn't even see that.
Yeah.
I wouldn't know how the guy looked like.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Is that the point? It's like, that's not just the point. It's just the recognition angle. It shows disrespect. There's already a whole other show devoted to other technical awards that we never watch, unless you purposely go out and seek it out. Now, they did say, the Academy, that they will be showing an air version on their website, like a YouTube tab that you can watch it streaming.
What do I care about that?
Right. I mean, a lot less people will definitely see that, but now, they are at least doing that.
I have a question.
Guess.
Is that being played at the same time as...
I don't know.
Because if it is, then I won't watch the ABC version, and I'll watch the on-air version.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah. If that's the case, then yeah, I'd rather do that.
Then, yeah.
But I don't think that's the case. I think they're not going to have people not watch the channel.
Yeah.
I think they just meant the clip.
Okay.
So that's what I want to talk about there. And another thing here is that, real quick, just something I thought of today. I was watching, when we were watching a Lego movie, there was the new Spider-Man trailer, which you've seen. I don't know if you've seen it.
No.
Far From Home, it's called.
Yes.
The movie? But well, you know there's a movie, right?
I caught the end of it. Sorry.
That there's a movie called Spider-Man coming out. Right? From the Marvel Universe type, not from the others.
Yeah.
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 So, are they just like... I mean, they're getting ahead of themselves, aren't they?
What do you mean?
I mean, Phase 2 just ended.
No, we're in Phase 3.
Thanos is in Phase 2?
No, Phase 3 is Thanos. Sorry.
I thought the Thanos slapping his fingers was the end of Phase 2.
I thought we were in Phase...
Okay, let's just call it Phase 3 then.
When is this movie coming out? Spider-Man?
After Avengers Infinity War or Endgame.
Oh, they're good. That's good.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. So the only one that's coming before then is the Marvel, Captain Marvel.
Yes.
Which I'm sure is going to explain a bunch of things. It's also.
Are you saying that they're ruining it because they're kind of
like
don't they
even care continuity at all? I mean, it's Marvel. They can afford not to goddamn show a trailer until fucking Endgame was out, right?
Yeah.
They can afford not to show it.
They can, yeah.
They did that spot at the Super Bowl about Captain Marvel. Again, I get that. That's also a flashback movie. It takes place in the 80s and 90s, and it's great. I love that idea.
Yeah,
that can work.
Why didn't we get Why didn't we just get a better Endgame trailer?
I don't even know the Endgame trailer. I know there was like a teaser of it. I haven't seen it.
Why don't we get an actual trailer for Endgame instead of whatever?
Instead of watching anything by Spider-Man or announcing anything. I mean, I understand that to a certain business degree, they have to announce some stuff. But like, do they even care about how things look? Like, at the end of Infinity War, Spider-Man is gone. That's all I'm saying. Spider-Man is gone. Just one of the characters that they made it, that the third part is coming out soon. Like, I don't understand. It doesn't, it seems weird. And seems like they are breaking the fourth wall. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
preemptively.
I did see the trailer. And Nick Fury's in it.
Yes, Nick Fury. Contracts
Nick Fury's
too.
Gone also.
And Mysterio? Mystic? What's his name?
Mysterio sounds right.
Yeah, with the bowl head. Right?
That's what I thought it was, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's Jake Gyllenhaal.
Okay.
Anyway, I just thought it was weird. And I just wanted to address it. I mean, you know how I am with the superhero movies lately. But
it is weird. They're shooting them. I feel like they're setting themselves up for, like, our fans know what's up.
Yeah.
And they're like, that's at this point, they don't care about anybody else.
I mean, don't get me wrong. When I saw Infinity War, it's not like I really thought that they weren't going to come back. Right. That's stupid to think that. But at the same time, though, that ending is, put it this way, when Endgame starts, the power of Infinity War and all these trailers in between have diminished the impact of Infinity War.
I agree.
So that's what I'm saying.
That is the problem.
So... I just wanted to address it and saying what you guys think about that. Let us know. Oh, by the way, you can send feedback at podmoviecast@gmail.com. Now, we can get into our first review of the evening, which is going to be, for real this time, the Lego Movie 2, the second part.
Lucy, I brought you coffee.
Coffee. The bitter liquid that provides the only semblance of pleasure left in these dark times.
Oh my goshness, did I interrupt you brooding just now?
Times have changed. You need to change with them.
We have to be tough and battle ready.
Look, a shooting star, make a wish.
Oh no.
Run!
Hurry,
Oh, the pain. It's getting so cold.
Emmett, what are you doing?
Hooray!
See, that wasn't so bad. Nothing got in.
Ah, something got in.
I'm General Mayhem. Bring me your fiercest leader.
Lucy!
Emmett. Ah!
This is all my fault.
Hang on to your fronds, Planny. We're going to save Lucy.
It's been 5 years since everything was awesome, and the citizens are facing a huge new threat, Lego Duplo invaders from outer space, wrecking everything faster than they can rebuild. This is Lego Movie 2, the second part, fun title, I love meta titles, and voice acted by all these people named Chris Pratt, Elizabeth Banks, Will Arnett, Tiffany Haddish, nice, Stephanie Beatrice, Allison Brie, Nick Offerman, Charlie Day, Maya Rudolph, Will Ferrell, Jaden Sand, Brooklyn Prince, Channing Tatum, Jonah Hill, Richard Ayoade from the One IT movie show thing, Ben Schwartz, Jason Momoa, as you know who. Anyway, a lot of actors, a lot of voice acting for
no,
sure.
Please.
Directed by Mike Mitchell, written by Phil Lord, Christopher Miller. Lord and Miller, you know who they are, right?
The Lords of Miller?
Mm-hmm. Have you seen, have you heard that name? Those names? They're a duo. They direct and write together.
I think I have.
Oh, they did a show you'll call Unikitty.
Oh, God.
About the kitty Lego thing. Huh, I didn't know that. Anyway, so I'm going to tell you something about them real quick, and then we'll get into some of the creative stuff in this movie, because I have some info here. So what they started off with, they started off in TV. They did some Brooklyn Nine-Nine. They did some How I Met Your Mothers, for example, things like that.
Okay.
But they did, their first big thing was, I think they did Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, I think.
Oh, is that them?
I think so. And then they did 21 Jump Street, the reboot.
Ah, okay.
They were really good at rebooting, basically, because they did the Lego Batman movie, or they produced it, I think. And let me see. I want to maybe look for directing instead, because this is driving me nuts. Let's go with directing. Yeah, 22 Jump Street, Lego Movie, 21 Jump Street. Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs, I was right about that. So they're like known for like taking really bad looking material and actually making them better, because you're like, come on, they're remaking 21. Maybe we said that.
Yeah.
We said that. We said when the first Lego movie came out, we're like, that sounds ridiculous. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Right? I mean,
everything was awesome. Yeah.
I think it was awesome. And they also, famously last year, they were, for the longest part until they got fired for creative differences, they were going to do the Solo movie. As a matter of fact, they did, I think, most of it. They had to reshoot when Ron Howard took over.
That's right. They were doing
that
the
was
Solo
them.
Movie.
That was them.
That was them.
Yeah.
That
imagine what that movie would have been.
That would have been pretty cool.
Based on their other movies. Oh, they also, did they produce it? I know they had a lot to do with the, didn't they actually make the movie? Hold on, I want to double check right now. Because I think they did Into the Spider-Verse.
Oh, they did Into the Spider-Verse?
I think so. I'm going to double check right now. Filmography. I want to double check because, or did they write it? I think they wrote it. Maybe I got it wrong. I know they had something to do with it. Oh, they produced it. That's what it was. But yeah, these guys are really good at taking properties that everyone knows or everyone thinks are stupid and make them really good. So they started the first one. They didn't direct this one. A new guy, Mike Mitchell, did it. And think about the director, who I think did a good job, by the way. Spoiler alert for my thoughts on Lego Movie 2. There was this guy who is really good, probably best friends with Dan Harmon. I listened to his show, and this guy named... why am I forgetting his name suddenly? If I hear it, man, I would... Fuck it, I don't remember. But one of his best friends was originally going to do the Lego Movie 2. He was going to direct it.
Okay.
He had directed a few episodes of Community. He actually been a voice actor for Community and other shows and other cartoons. And he got fired for creative differences again about a year and a half ago? Or a year ago, maybe?
For this movie?
For this movie. And I really wanted to see his movie for the longest time. So I was bummed out when I found out that he got fired from it. So that's my own personal little take on that movie. Now let's get into the movie itself. What did you think of Lego Movie 2, the second part?
The director did Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo. Just letting you know.
New to me, I guess, I meant to say.
Along with Trolls. So, yeah.
I haven't seen Trolls.
Interesting. I have.
He's mainly as an actor. He's an actor in a bunch of stuff.
Who, Mike Mitchell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He also did the SpongeBob movie, the second one.
Yeah.
Alvin and Chipmunks. Oof.
Yeah, I
Shrek
know.
Shrek Forever After. That's the one I never saw.
Yeah, me neither.
Surviving Christmas. I don't know that one. Greg the Bunny. I've seen that show. Yeah, Deuce Bagel is clearly his biggest movie, other than Lego Movie 2. Okay. Anyway, so what did you think of the movie itself?
Man.
Everything I gotta stop asking you when you're fucking yawning.
Everything was not awesome in this movie.
And that's a compliment.
And that is a compliment, yes. Because it's a song. I liked it. Overall, I had fun watching it. Still captured that. It wasn't unique, obviously, but that's fine. But it's still, I like this whole plot that's going on in the real world and the plot that's happening, you know, for the Lego characters. So right. That's what I kind of enjoyed, because I think that was a big surprise for the first movie.
Definitely. So spoilers for the first one is that you find out that they introduced the real world into the story of the Lego movie in the original, where these toys are being played. They have their plot and story of the movie you're watching is being manifested by this boy who wants to play with his father's Lego toys, Lego collection. And that the whole point is that the father, you know, the whole redemption is that the father lets him play with them as opposed to leaving as collectibles.
Yes.
Essentially.
Essentially.
And they bring in the real Will Ferrell in there to talk to his real son, live actor, with the toys that you're watching the whole time.
Right, exactly.
It's really cool meta.
Yeah, it is like we're watching this kid's imagination, essentially.
Yeah, it's very cool.
So it is cool, yes.
It's a gigantic advertisement and commercial for Legos, but it also works as good a story, too. It works both ways.
It does, yes. So that being said, they had incorporate more. I like the story overall, how picks up right after the next movie, and I think it's 5 years later, right? I think they said that.
Yeah, they did say that. That 5 years is key.
It is actually key. 5 years later, and you have Emmett, who's still the same person. Like, he never changed. He's still listening to the same music, you know.
He still thinks everything is awesome.
Exactly. And it's because he's with his friends, you know, or whatever. So everybody else's desolate world and stuff like that. I like the story. I like that they move to this Duplo world, or this weird, very colorful world, and compared to this bleak world that they had, or more
post-apocalyptic.
Well, also just a more structured world that they have.
What do they call it, post-apocalypseburg?
Yeah, the other world is like the kiddie world of this world. It's like that's everything in that universe over there.
Yeah, and it's not spoiler to say that you find out very quickly on, because the movie knows that the cat's out of the box, or whatever, the hat, whatever, that this is all real world setting for some other characters, the family that's involved with playing these toys. And you find out that the girl, that's the girl's world, the little sister.
The little sister, yeah.
Right.
So, I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed the whole aspect of what they had to do. The music still does well. I actually like the credit music too. It's very meta, very self-aware of itself.
Yeah, but not like Deadpool. Like, Deadpool is too self-aware with their opening scenes and credits and
there
stuff.
There is, yeah.
Sometimes. This one never goes that far, I think. It does it just enough for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But overall, my son loved it. He had a blast.
Oh, dude, I wish I was there just to see your kid enjoying it.
Yeah, he had a blast. And he, you know, besides his obligatory bathroom break, yeah, it was good.
Nice. He's how old?
Five. Okay. Overall, I still had fun watching the movie. I love the random cool references. Wasn't as cool as Batman's references. I think Batman had the better of that, but this one still had a really good one. Message is still cool. I think the Lego Movie 2 was a good sequel.
Yes, I agree. Lockstep with you. A few things I do want to say is that I love, this is more for spoilers, but I'll just say why, I'll talk about it then, is that I love this extra fourth wall breaking they do, and we'll talk about that moment later. But here, I mean, just the cast, I love how the casting relates so much to the story and how it becomes like a joke in itself. For example, Chris Pratt plays the main character's voice, right? In it, he discovers a guy who is Chris Pratt's character in the Jurassic World movies. And the way they make fun of Chris Pratt's archetype from those movies, and they even make fun of how he was once fat, like he came from the cheeky, you know, like from his time. What was that show that he did?
Parks and Rec. Yeah.
And like, it's just so perfect. I'm like, Jesus, that's so funny. He's basically making fun of himself to his own face, you know? It's really funny. And I really like that's the kind of level we're on with the jokes. And that kind of thing will go bypass the kid, but it has plenty of animation flourishes to entertain everyone. as well as not just kids. They don't have to understand Parks and Rec.
Right.
They,
I mean, there's a badass Back to the Future reference.
You're right.
Yeah.
Right, right. And they take down. Right.
Don't want to spoil anything.
Right. Yeah. That's a really cool one, though. Yeah. And I love all of that. And I don't think it meets the quality of the first one, but it also knows not to try. It doesn't try to.
That's what I liked about the movie. I like that
it knows that a sequel cannot, because the first one is the big wow. It's the one that you've done, like, they could never pull this off. And not only did they pull it off amazingly. And they, you know, it's a great story on top of the great animation, which is stop motion. And it's insane to think about how they did all that. That's a lot of work. This movie's a lot of work.
So stop it motion took years animation.
Like
yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of work. It doesn't feel like it. But it's amazing. I love the crew in this movie. And so the second one, they know they can't top those two things.
Right.
The excitement of being first and the way it gets there with the meta-ness. But the second one builds on that really well. And I think it acknowledges some of the pitfalls of sequels that get bad. And it says, like, we're not really doing that. We're going to try to just grow from this point and talk about the levels of growing. Because in a way, this movie is about adulting and responsibilities in a way. And also about sharing, and it's great fucking messages in there, and it's all that's kind of upfront. I'm not spoiling anything to say that. There's more to it than that as well. Yeah, I liked it. I liked it a lot. Really great. Anything you want to mention before we get into spoilers?
No, but I can see some references going over your head.
Yeah,
if you don't know what's going on. For kids, it's just cool stuff, right?
Yeah.
But for adults, I love it. I love watching some of those things, and you were just like. Yes, I like that. I like that a lot right there.
Yeah. And they're so quick sometimes.
Very.
There's this Batman song that does a lot of comparison to Superman with him. It's really funny. And also, you would understand it if you've seen the movies. You know yes. what the hell they're talking about more. You know, it goes farther in, you know. It works really well. So those are our thoughts on that movie. Let's get into spoilers for Lego Movie 2, the second part, starting now.
Good morning, Apocalypseburg! Good morning! Hello, cyborgs!
I wake up in the morning,
I
wide awake for the day.
I sing
and I sleep. What a morning! It's all okay. Everything is awesome!
Hey, Surfer Dave! It's Chainsaw Dave now!
Morning, Scribble Cop!
Morning, sewer babies.
This song never gets old.
Everything is awesome.
Ooh, sorry.
Dude, when they took down the DeLorean. And then the time machine from the time machine. And then
the TARDIS.
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
The phone booth. The TARDIS.
There's another one. Another one or two. I forget, actually. But damn, it was so fucking awesome.
Yeah. And then he built a fist, a giant fist.
Which is also perfect, bro, dude. It's so good.
Yeah.
So the extra fourth wall, let's call it fifth wall, for example, breaking of this movie, is that they actually make the toys... like work themselves. Remember, so when they're describing how the older version of Emmett, right, who is the raptor dude, what's his name again in the movie? Max? No, something. I forget his name. He was stuck under the laundry machine. He actually got himself to actualize and move himself back onto the playing field. That's the fifth level. That's the fifth wall breaking of these toys being so powerful, like so imbued with imagination, let's just say. They don't really go into any science. They just say that he does that. And then Emmett himself, you know, they actually have a fight that's really funny and just two toys fighting each other at the end there. That was really cool. I like that. The movie kind of like went all out on that front. I don't know if you liked it. Was it too much for you? Or was it like too unbelievable?
No, because I think we had like a little flourish of that in the first one.
Yeah. They did. They showed some wiggling, I think.
Yeah.
You're right. So maybe it's not so revolutionary, but I like how they pushed that farther in. I guess I did forget that about the first movie. But yeah, one thing that was a little sad to see is that Will Ferrell wasn't in the movie this time.
Just voice acted.
Yeah, like,
whatever your mother says.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I don't have the biggest complaint about it, but I did want to see what you know, I kind of want to see what the 5 years has been since he made the decision to let his kid play with his collectibles. Like, you kind of want them to play together. I kind of really thought that some of the stuff that the dad had built, maybe in the 5 years or before that, maybe come into play in some way into this world crashing between the brother and the sister.
Yeah.
You know, I almost wish that would happen.
Hey, maybe part, really three, maybe part three is about that.
Yeah, but I feel like they dropped the ball because it makes it seem like the father just said, okay, fine, you can play with my toys, and he never plays with them either. Like, it seems like they dropped that ball, maybe.
I don't know. Do they drop the ball, or do they even – or do they? Does the movie say that also? Because what is the – what's it called? Mm. The guy, the businessman.
Yeah.
What does he do? He's like, I'm going to go play some golf, I guess. I'm going to leave the house. He leaves the area because his dad's going to go play golf. His dad's not around.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just saying, hey, my dad's not around anymore since I took over the Lego stuff. Or 5 years have gone by and just...
Never play with him? He's so hard-ass about...
I just grown up, you know, whatever.
I guess. Maybe. But the whole sibling thing, what did you think of the whole sibling rivalry? Let's just call it mild rivalry because it's not real.
No, yeah.
I mean, we're siblings.
Yeah, no. I thought it was funny. I thought it was. I thought it was interesting.
I remember us being forced to share, or we get nothing, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I just feel like it was forced upon. You know, like the kid wanted. He was forced to share. He never wanted to because he fought to get this. Basically, stole it from his dad.
Yeah,
and then he has to share what he stole from his dad.
Yeah, I see. Like he's been through war and she's reaping the benefits.
Yeah, so essentially. Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So, I really didn't see that position from him, but I think I thought he was just being a boy, being selfish.
Oh, yeah, just being selfish for sure.
No, what I'm trying to get at is that I don't think the way they were showing siblings and how they work, like by the end of it, they work together. But that's the most unrealistic part of this whole thing, is how easily that became a thing.
I did love Tiffany Haddish, though, her music note, her musical part.
Remind me.
It's when she's singing the "She's the Queen" or whatever.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
The shape shifting.
Yes.
It's like, this is your way of saying it. Doesn't it sounds so shady? Like,
yeah, it does. She's saying she's not shady, but she looks so bad.
Well, it's like
Queen whatever wannabe.
Yeah, whatever I wanna be. Yeah,
yeah.
And it's what is it? It just has words like what was it? I can't think of it was like words, bad ones, but she put a negative in front of them and she hand wrote them.
Oh, yeah. And un something.
Yeah.
Unbad, unevil.
Yeah. Unevil, like evil, right? It was like an evil and a cue card, right? Big words and then just un on the top of it. Mm-hmm. And you're like, wait, no. And it just looks like you guys made this whole thing up. It was really funny. And it's cool. I like how they played that into like, well, I'm just a little girl, you know, through the little girl's perspective, is like, I'm just a little girl trying to fit in your world where how do I play with my brother? You know, my brother says, well, this is how he plays with his, you know, toys. Why can't I guess I'll do the same, you know.
Yeah.
I'm willing to shape into whatever ways to help you to play with you guys. And of course, marriage for her is like, well, now they're married. Now they have to.
Right. No, I get that. United. And also, you know, marrying Batman, the unmarriable bachelor.
Right. Also, that happens in every movie possible. Well, now that our planets have been married together, we have to. Or now that our countries are married together, now that our families are married together. That's literally how it works.
Right. Yeah. I did like how they did, like, maybe, I don't know if you noticed the subtleness or not. I mean, it wasn't that subtle, but it kind of was because they didn't really bring it up. The first Lego movie ends where this one begins as well, about the dupe. Duplo Lego sets were invading, right?
Yes.
And by the way, I did overall enjoy the twist on that. But is that the Duplo thing? So 5 years passed, and her Legos do look more adult. They're not Duplo, not all of them anyway. Like some of them are, like the Wonder Woman one is, but like most of them are just they're.
Well, they're growing with age because she's got three Wonder Woman ones,
right,
for example.
That's what I'm saying.
The Super Duplo one, the one a little bit. Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, don't get me wrong. This is a great advertisement campaign for her.
I do want to get some of these sets. Like, which set would you get? Like, which vehicle or character or house? Like, I would like, for example, I would like the Fist with a raptor in it.
Yeah, that was cool.
I like the raptors. They would say pew pew, but they would do the translating thing, which is very from the original movie. I would love the fist for sure to make that. I like the that the ship of that the first alien that comes down and kidnaps them all.
Uh-huh.
I forgot the name, but yeah, I would like that one too. Anything of you that you can see yourself making or want to make?
Oh man, I kind of want to make the dystopian what's it called?
Wasteland?
No, not the whole thing.
Not the wasteland.
No, the Statue of Liberty. Decapitated thing.
Yes.
That looks cool.
Very Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very Planet of the Apes. That looks cool. Along with the two you said.
Yeah. We've never been much Lego kids. I don't know if they weren't available for us or we just couldn't get them. But I that'd be cool if I got into that when I was a kid. I would understand them a lot better. Because I know a lot of people grow up playing the shit out of those things and or whatever and having imagination about it and all that. But like yeah. I've never had that. Not to say I've never built anything by Lego, but like definitely when I was much older. It wasn't a start as a kid. Maybe one or two little things, but not really. So just gonna say that's my history background on Legos in general. But I've been to a Lego store, it's really cool.
Yeah.
And I wanna do it. But I would do it mainly as Will Ferrell's character and just collect it. Make it once, put glue on it.
Oh yeah, I'm a craggle for sure. Like I'm a craggle guy.
Yeah, craggle. Yeah. That's right, crazy glue. Yeah, I will craggle it up probably because I'm too old now, you know. But whatever. This movie, besides the unrealisticness of sibling stuff, I like Maya Rudolph's thing. Overall, I liked how they were mispronouncing Armageddon. And they put mom in the title
for
that reason, because it's the mom's decision whether or not the toys will be banished.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right? That was cool. And then when the movie did the fake ending, did you believe it for a second or no? Remember the movie ended on a down note? Kind of like Avengers Infinity War. Now that I think about it. And it had the end. And they're like, what? It can't end there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I did find that funny.
I thought they were going to set up a third movie and they were just going to make a funny way to end it on a bad note. But no, the movie actually made an ending.
Yeah. I did wonder how they had that whole fortune-telling thing because he had that nightmare. Remember he said he had a nightmare? Mm-hmm. And at 5:15, the dolphin was going to tell that our Marmageddon was going to happen.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, how did you get that far and everything was coming to pieces? Or to fit?
Yeah, I think the implication was that that's when the mom gets home.
That was interesting. That would be interesting, though.
Right, like when the mom gets home from work or checks up on them or maybe, or something like that. Because I assume it's the weekend. They've been playing all day. I don't think they're at school.
Yeah, summer.
Or summer, maybe. Yeah, you're right. So that's what I think. That's what I originally thought, but maybe I might be wrong. I haven't thought of anything else. Anything else you want to say about it? It's more than a kid's film. You know, it's, I think... I almost compared it.
It is more than a kid's film because my crowd was all adults.
Really, was it? Oh, I didn't know that.
Or older kids.
I saw like a man showing, so older people. But I liked when I came out of the theater, I compared it. My first thought was to compare it to another big animated sequel, which was Incredibles 2. And I do think that this movie works better in story and in creativity, I would say, than Incredibles 2. Because I think the first Incredibles, just like the first Lego movie, it's too awesome to break through again. So, but the second one, I think that the quality of making the sequel works better in this movie, Lego movie, than Incredibles 2. I don't know how you feel about that. I'm just comparing two big movies that came out and within a year of each other. But maybe not as good as Toy Story 2. A lot of people love that movie.
Yeah,
but. Yeah, I know. As far as part twos go for animated stuff, is that this is a really good entry. And it's way better than Finding Dory, I'll say that too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I would agree.
So, yeah, I'm just going to say of the big ones. So, now that's all I have. Anything else you want to say?
No.
Cool. So, we do recommend it. It still doesn't meet the level of Lego Batman movie. Because Lego Batman movie really hits home for me.
It does, yeah.
Because it's nostalgic on top of being everything cool.
Yeah, and then like just references galore. It's great.
And I love getting them. Yeah.
That's another thing, yeah. Me too.
And Will and S still just as good. Perfect casting for that guy. All right, cool. So that's Lego Movie 2, the second part. I hope you enjoyed our review on that. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll review our second movie of the evening, which is going to be a movie that's out on rental, and you can buy it now. It's called Can You Ever Forgive Me? Can You?
just these. I don't want the others.
Come on, man. I schlepped these all the way here.
There's people waiting.
You know, you don't have to be so disrespectful. You've actually carried my books here.
And you are?
Lee Israel.
Oh, we have copies of your latest work right over there.
Nobody is going to pay for the writer Lee Israel right now.
I'm months behind in my rent, and my cat is sick.
It's 4 p.m. You're drunk.
I'm hardly drunk.
Craig, no problem.
My suggestion to you is you go out there and you find another way to make a living.
Recently found this delightful sign letter.
Fanny Bryce, one of my favorites. I could give you 75.
Oh.
I could give more for better content. It's a bit bland is all.
Yeah, I can definitely get a lot more for this one.
I mean, the PS makes it priceless.
Lee Israel made her living in the 1970s and 80s profiling the likes of Katharine Hepburn, Tallulah Bankhead, Estee Lauder, and journalist Dorothy Kilgallen. When Lee is no longer able to get published because she has fallen out of step with current taste, she turns her art form to deception, abetted by her loyal friend Jack. This is Can You Ever Forgive Me? Movie starring Melissa McCarthy, Richard E. Grant, Dolly Wells, Ben Falcone, Jane Curtin, which is from, what's that show? Third Rock from the Sun, right? That's her. Is that her?
Yes.
I think so, right? Bunch of other actors. This is directed by Mariel Heller, and that's the reason I really want to see this movie. And written by Nicole Holofcener, and Jeff Witte. Nicole Holofcener did a really one of my favorite romantic movies in the last decade for sure. It's Enough Said. I don't know if you've seen that movie. She wrote and directed that one. But I really really love that movie, and I love her writing overall. And And Mariel Heller did a movie that made my top discoveries, because I didn't see it the year it came out, The Diary of a Teenage Girl. I don't know if you saw that one. Have you seen it?
Maybe, I don't know. I don't think so.
No? Okay. Well, she directed that movie. She also directed something else. Nope, that's acting. Directing. A couple episodes of Transparent. But yeah, this is basically her second film, Can You Ever Forgive Me? So... I started last time, so you did first impressions first last time, so I'll do it this time. This movie is, I thought, was pretty good, pretty well. And some parts of it are really pretty great. And I would say the pretty great stuff is mainly the performance by Melissa McCarthy, who I think it's one of those things like when Jim Carrey did his first serious movie after doing like 50 comedies or 50 movies about him being a goofball. It kind of, at first, it felt a little like that, like it's trying to, like the actor's trying something new, maybe, or something. But usually it doesn't do that great for the actor because they're so known and so out of their wheelhouse to do non-comedic roles. But in this one, it feels seamless for her to just shift gears to be this very mean, abrasive woman who is very alone, loves only her cat, hates all humans kind of thing, and drinks in every scene, and plays a writer persona really well. And I'm comparing it, of course, to other literary works that I've read or other movies I've seen portraying writers, either screenwriters or book writers, whatever. And I think she does it her own way very well. She plays this character. I mean, I don't know Lee Israel. I never read. This is based on a true story, by the way. I don't know anything about Lee Israel, the person, but safe to say is that I kind of believe that Lee Israel would be this kind of way. But obviously, this is a fiction movie, so let's not get too far ahead there. But I think she makes her own character very well. And Melissa McCarthy does things that, you know, that are also very funny, but in a very mean-spirited way, or very funny, but in a depression kind of way. You know, like she does things really well. She has really great timing with anyone else that's on screen with her. And both serious, awkward, disappointed, or funny stuff. And she is clearly the standout. Her and Richard E. Grant, who I don't know much about him before this movie, unfortunately, plays the best friend. No, not the best friend, but the friend in her current life. This gay guy named, what was his name, Jack again? Was that his name?
Yeah, Jack Hawk.
Jack Hawk, thank you.
Big Hawk.
That's right, because he says that. Jack Hawk. And also very good. And... I just love the performances mainly about this movie. As far as the writing and directing, pretty good, pretty solid. I love how the movie lets a lot of things breathe to get to the main plot of the movie. Like I just described, that she turns her writing into a form of deception, which is fraud, I guess. Is the best way to say it. Fraud or some other word for it? Fraud, right?
What's fraud?
Yeah. Forgery, right? In fraud. And the movie takes its time to let that happen. Like, the movie likes to focus on her, how she reacts to people, how she reacts to strangers versus, like, literary professionals versus what she thought, or maybe what could be construed as associates or friends or people you just know. The movie lets you really feel her world and why she would turn to fraud to continue living or to find purpose in her day-to-day, like the way her cat, the way the drinking, the way her house looks, how horrible it looks, unclean and everything. The movie does a good job of painting this really great picture of her before anything really starts. And it feels very natural by the time all the forgery stuff comes in. But that's my thoughts on the movie itself. What do you think?
I think this guy is in a lot of fucking things.
Oh, I'm sure. I think he did look a little familiar, but I'm not.
He's got a lot of. Yeah, he's got a lot of roles. It's just minor roles, obviously.
127 roles? Fuck me.
Yeah, I know. That's why I said he's got a lot. I agree for the most part with you.
He plays that albino doctor in Logan.
Yeah.
Ah, wow. I didn't recognize him. Cool. Yeah. Sorry, I'll stop interrupting.
Go ahead. Okay. Yeah, I was going to interrupt you, but you were talking, and I wasn't being rude. Anyways, I will say Melissa McCarthy's role is good. I do agree with you. She, from what I don't know anything about a writer's life besides of what I see on TV, minimal stuff I've read that I've mainly based off of what I've seen on TV. what's it called? So yeah, she plays like every other author or every other writer that I've ever met in movies and stuff like that. Specifically, like what's that one? The typewriter with the lunch and the food.
Typewriter with the lunch. That's so weird and specific. Naked Lunch.
Naked Lunch. Is that exactly what you're thinking? Yes, okay. Naked Lunch. Because they're drunk and high all the time, and they're writers.
Yeah, writers. I mean. Yes.
I just wanted to give an example, mm-hmm. as in, like, that's the extreme threat, right? Mm-hmm. We'll leave it at that. No need to go into Lake and Lunch right now.
I wasn't going to go into Lake.
Oh, okay, cool. Anyways, so yes, to that extent, I agree. Very minimal scenes with her not drinking, essentially. And it's kind of it's a sad story. It's a sad life, and it's a person who's kind of pushed into a corner because she's being asked to completely change her persona when she doesn't. Why can't the world? It's not the why can't the world come to her change for her. It's like she was already established. Why does she have to change now when she was already established? And that's what she's mad about in life. And that's
she's asked basically to change her ambitions in a way, right?
Kind of, yeah. It's ambitions, but it's also change how she is. And
yeah, that goes without saying. Well, that's made explicit later on too.
That's the problem is that, and you clearly find out that this is a person who's struggling to find the passion in her work again because no one cares, and she knows that no one cares, and why should she care, kind of thing, mm-hmm. you know. And it's hard, and I've fallen into that trap many times myself. And that's in my everyday life, like let alone her livelihood. That's her livelihood, you know? Yeah. So watching her to, you know, it is a powerful performance from her. I think it's a little bit too hyped up for me, though. Her performance has been a little bit too hyped up for me.
Oh, you mean before you saw it?
Yes, before I saw it.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people were like, oh, my God, it's like her best role. And I go, I mean, I don't know. She did great in the other roles. Except for, you know, like some other roles were just meh. But I've seen this flourishes of this character in other of her roles. Like in Bridesmaids, when she plays the butch guy or whatever. Mm-hmm. I've seen there's flourishes a little bit of that person in here as well.
Yes.
In random roles, little odds and ends. It's still Melissa McCarthy. Like, it's still her roles, and I still see her in it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't see this, like, transformative character. Not that I wanted it. but that's what I felt like I was almost to expect.
Well, yeah, I mean, we did choose it. I mean, I personally chose this movie because I wanted to catch up on some of the stuff.
I agree.
And this was nominated too.
And I would, and I, that's exactly why I just said, yeah,
it's almost like totally a watch this. Yeah, it's a weird situation.
I know, but I did mean. Fall in love with Richard E. Grant's character. I thought his character was great.
Yeah.
What's it called? And I liked overall the story of finding out what a person will do, and then how caught up a person can get into something, especially when you're kind of have not the right influences in your life. Mm-hmm. And even with the right influences in your life, you fuck that shit up. It's hard because it's a lot of it's a lot from you as a person, and knowing that you're gonna have to fail at some stuff to shit like that. There's a lot of stuff going on in this movie as an adult that you should look at, and how to avoid a pitfall, and how to just kind of know how to take a breath and kind of step out and see yourself in a third person, and see the stuff that's going around you in a third person, in a, you know, different angle, just to take it all in and be like, wow, I'm kind of a fuck up.
In several ways, she is a woman who, who needs
a little guidance. Step back. Makes a step, exactly. Did take a step back.
That she never does.
Exactly. Right, that's the problem. But that's what I like about the movie. I did like the movie. So that's what I'm trying to get at. Mm-hmm. I did like the movie overall. I did like the performance overall. Mm-hmm. I was more captured by our supporting actor than I was by Melissa McCarthy's character, because I wasn't expecting his, and I was expecting hers to be already great. Not that I'm saying it wasn't great. It was great. A little bit too much hype.
The only other movie, first of all, I want to say that Melissa McCarthy as an actress, I think she's been, unfortunately, just been in really bad movies, but she herself is always like the best thing in
the movie. The best thing in the movie, yeah.
But
yeah.
She is doing her best.
Don't get me wrong. I love this character in the beginning and in the end, and some flourishes in the middle.
Okay.
As a character.
As Lee Israel.
Yeah, as Lee Israel.
Right.
Some stuff in the middle when she's having a lot of fun and stuff like that. She's just caught up in it.
Yeah.
That's fine.
And the two times that she laughs, I feel...
Well, the first time when she does like that smirk.
Yeah.
I was like, that beginning part, everything from there says a lot about the character. And you get a lot from just even that little smirk. And you're like, wow, that's cool. Great. And that's a great performance from her. And the same thing at the end when she just breaks down.
So I have two examples. I think there are two movies. This is why I think a lot of people are hailing this one as her best, or the reason they're hailing it is because there's two movies that only hinges on her performance, because some of those other movies don't have to hinge on her performance. It's amazing that she is the best thing in that movie, but if other stuff worked, it doesn't hinge on it. You know what I'm saying? This movie hinges on her performance. The other one is Spy, which is like my clear favorite before this movie, and maybe it still is. I don't know yet. But Spy completely hinges on her being a straight woman in this case, because everyone else is ridiculous around her.
Yeah.
Right? Hinges on her being the only person with some sort of logic, right? And it makes it everything funnier. Which is great, and also unfortunately led to a lot of bad movies because of that, because she started being in that movie a lot and not good writing. But so I would say these two are her best movies for sure, and I think that's why, you know, it's just that we've gotten used to being disappointed by her movies lately. That's why people are really going for
it. That, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. But also, you know, at the same time, if people weren't hailing it so much, we wouldn't have seen it.
You know,
so.
The thing is, like, for me, it's even if her movies were bad, I still liked her performances in it.
Yeah, I've never liked her performance
in it. I think her weakest was Happy Time Murders.
It might be. But it might be recency bias.
No, I just think it's her weakest performance.
The Sandra Bullock one was also pretty bad.
I didn't see it, so I can't say.
Okay.
But that did smart, but I avoided that one. Mm-hmm. It could be recency bias, but I think...
I mean, I saw her in Go, for fuck's sake. I've known her for a long time.
Was she in Go?
She's the one scene.
What scene?
Do you remember that movie well enough?
I do. Yes.
Okay. When the third story with the gay guys, or the two of them gay,
the Miata, I think
both gay. The Miata, right? They go to that other guy's house that they was cheating on. They were cheating with both of them, but they didn't know until that point. So they go to his house. His sister's there. That's played by Melissa McCarthy, and she tells them that that he's at this club where they go meet him. And they cut off his hair. She's the one that tells them. But she's like trying to hide the fact that, because she knows the whole time that he's been screwing both without them knowing.
Yeah.
And she's like, do you guys know? I'm like, yes, we know. And she starts like going giddy.
That's right. That's okay. I can't picture her in it.
Yes.
But I picture the scene because I remember the two actors.
That was a really funny scene. Okay. Anyway, that's how long I've known her. So I've always wanted her to succeed for sure. So let's get into some spoilers territory.
She's successful.
We haven't talked about the forging stuff at all. Huh?
She's successful. Don't have to worry about that. Yeah.
Right. No. But no. But I mean,
I know what you mean.
You know what I mean. Okay. Yeah. I want to see her in good stuff. So, spoilers for Can You Ever Forgive Me? Starting right now.
Wasn't this one line here was particularly clever? Don't you think?
It's wonderful. I love his writing, and Dorothy Parker as well. Caustic wit. You know.
Caustic wit is my religion.
I can't carry it off. You certainly can.
Doesn't help too much in the relationship department.
I'm sure that's not true. Okay, should we settle up?
Yeah.
What did you think of the title and the way... What do you think the title evokes for you? Because the movie is, I mean, explicitly puts that title out there for...
I don't know who she's asking.
Well, I mean, that could be many reasons. That could be many things. If it's an actual question,
who is she writing the book for? Is she writing the book for the world? Can you ever forgive me for doing this? The literary world,
that bookstore owner,
right? Her friend, everybody she's ever fucked in her life, fucked over, or just had a bad relations with,
right?
Is she asking herself?
I think it's a little bit of that. I think that that's the one I fall into more. If you ask that, if it's a literal question she's asking, or if the title's there for the fact that her major forgery that was still in circulation for a while there, which is funny.
It's
based on a Dorothy Parker line that she made up. You know, can you ever forgive me? Right. And that first P.S. that she wrote about Dorothy Parker's letters.
Yeah, that's right.
That's why I think
I'm more Dorothy Parker than Dorothy Parker.
That was a great line too.
Yeah.
And she is, because I've read some Dorothy Parker. No Don Powell here, but it's really good. And
I don't know what you said, but yeah,
it's okay. It's just the two female writers of their age, pretty witty writers.
Okay.
Every time someone's a woman on a Friday, I just say those two people right there. Anyway. But I loved it. It's a lot of work. She puts like Catch Me If You Can levels of work of like finessing.
She's obviously
forgeries.
A bright person.
Yes,
she's obviously a smart individual.
Yes.
I love the bit about, well, it's not a bit, because just the part with when she goes to her publisher and talks about Tom Clancy. And she's like, he's getting millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And I have to fucking get an advance.
Yeah, I don't remember which episode I mentioned this, but I think it was when...
And I was like, because this is 1991 in this movie, right?
Yeah.
That's what they said. And I was like, you don't even know the half of it. He's about to get video games, movies.
Oh, that's right.
And I was like, man, he's about to ball.
Dude, that guy can't stop getting money.
No.
Ben Affleck hasn't even made the movie yet, but the first Jack Ryan movie of his own. But Harrison Ford had, I think.
Right, yeah.
That's what she said. I'm Harrison fucking Ford, right? Because I think that Jack Ryan movie came out already, I think.
At this point, he's just like smoking with a cigar, counting his money, and that's all he does all day, all year long, because that's how much money he gets. Yeah. But in singles. So you can keep doing it all day.
In singles.
Yeah.
Wow. I love that they called it, because a lot of these literary professionals, as they kind of tend to be, they're leftists, right? Of course, they're more democratic. Right, they're all about that kind of thing. Artistically speaking, you kind of not have to be, of course. A lot of them are not, but most of them are because of the way the style is. And a lot of them point out when they mention him is that alt-right fucker, and you know, because that's what he is. Jack Ryan. What's his name?
Tom Clancy.
Tom Clancy. Thank you. Tom Clancy is he's kind of the king of that in book-wise, anyway. And it's funny how if you compare alt-right now with that guy. He's seen as complete leftist. Completely. Yeah. It's amazing, that shift. I just want to mention that real quick political statement there, that you guys have to fucking clean up your act and make up your minds on what you want. Okay. I love the forgery stuff. I love how the movie... See, one good thing about this movie is that as adaptation movies go, because it's a biopic, right? We're saluting a biopic here. Luke will love this. I think a lesser biopic movie would have focused completely on, maybe even started, or like with the, you know, maybe excluding the first 10 minutes of introducing a character. Most movies do it. And they go right into the forgery stuff and the specifics of everything, some of the anecdotes that led to funny moments of how she escaped this barely, or, you know, her first lie to the first book collector guy, you know, things like that. The movie does, the funny thing is that this movie does all of that, but it feels like a secondary chapter to her day-to-day life, because it's about her and the forgeries are second. Now, where the forgeries lead to her changing as a character,
yes.
Which equals out to be the most important
thing.
Which
is, but that is right. why the movie's good.
It's yes.
well made, as made.
Right. So that ending when she's telling that thing to the judge,
yeah.
it hits more.
It does.
Right.
Right. Right. Exactly. But it also hits more throughout the movie because you get a backstory mm-hmm. and you get a whole thing of like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, as a person, you get to know her a little bit more. You get to yeah. do this, you get to do that. So everything connects more. Everything is just a little bit more impactful, and you just don't see a woman scorned
yeah.
Throughout the movie.
Yeah, and she did get lucky with that sentencing for sure.
Fucking lucky.
Yeah.
Yeah, that lawyer, by the way, the actor Mark Evan Jackson.
He's in tons of things.
He's in tons of things.
Tons
yeah.
of things. You mentioned yeah. Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine right? is one of the things. Yeah. He plays the captain's
boyfriend or husband. Yeah. They're married?
Okay. They're married.
Yeah, yeah, they're married. Oh, man, I haven't seen that show in a while. He's in a lot of things. I think
he is. Yeah, I just looked him up. I was
confusing
stuff.
With someone else. Anyway, he's in a lot of things.
He's got a memorable face.
Yeah, yeah. He's one of those kind of characters. Like, oh, I know that guy.
Yeah.
From XYZ. Yeah, and what did you think of... So what do you think about this? Because we're about to enter. I kind of wish that Lego Movie might have gotten a good follow-through, but it doesn't. But this movie and the next movie we're reviewing, Ralph, they have to do with the art world. In a way. I mean, literary world, they wouldn't say call themselves artists in that way, but they're writers. They're of a type. They're part historians. In this case, they're talking about adapting people's lives because Lee Israel is trying to adapt a Lee Bryce book. Oh, not is it Lee Bryce or something Bryce book, and no one wants to fucking hear it.
Right.
And she meets other people who, most of the people she comes in contact with are literary professionals developed to just getting collectibles from previous greater writers. But a lot of them do write their own shit too, and a lot of times she is encouraged to write her own shit. She stares at that blank piece of paper all the time. Writer's block. Really funny beginning with that writer's block comment earlier, by the way. What did you think of the way this movie chooses to show the writer's world or writing in general as a profession? What do you think the movie has to say about it? Because I think the movie has all these characters say these certain lines for a good reason. But what do you think?
Well, I think the movie doesn't want to touch base on that. I think the movie just wants to really focus on the character. And obviously you will touch a little bit of it where, cause it's her world, right? She's in this, she's a writer. But we just see it through her perspective, right? We get a little flourish of what we saw in the beginning, at that one party she goes to.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, that's it. We only get it through her perspective, and then
right. The next movie does focus a lot more on that world, but this one I think it does a little bit because
yeah. But what it does, where it does, should I say, is in the bookstores, and it goes into these like collectors, people appreciate literary, what's it called, literary works as an art.
And history, too.
And history like as a well. History, so it's a little too. Bit of both history and art, right? So that's where that world is more in.
Right.
And
so them holding a piece of paper that this famous person 100 years
right,
ago wrote.
Right, but there's also a very big, powerful scene where he's getting her to sell the what's it called? She's getting him to sell the forgeries,
mm-hmm.
and he shorts her on accident. It looked like it was an accident.
Yes.
But he was just excited that he did it. And
right.
he was like, he miscounted, pounces. And she instantly pounces, right? And then she goes on this rant that you're like, who are you to say this?
Mm-hmm.
Right? But the rant is basically saying, you should take this work of art seriously. This is history. These are people who are buying this thing, like this spiel that she got earlier in the movie, yeah. right?
But she's always believed in.
But she's always believed right. in, exactly. But she took it as in her own work is being put out there, and I'm just Mr. Anonymous, Mr. X.
Right. This is her writing project that she's been trying to get off the ground. It's just that happens to be forgeries.
Exactly. It happened right. And it happened to be she's just good at that. She should have been a writer on SNL or something. You know, like
well, I mean,
she should have been a writer. Somewhere
they were around
for yeah, of course they were for comedy purposes or something yeah. like that. You know, she or a ghostwriter for somebody. She would have been good at that.
Yeah,
if true. You think about it, if she really wanted to put her effort, but she never wanted to. She didn't want to stoop to anybody doing somebody else's work. She wanted to do her own work, and this is just came out to that aspect of it. But that shows me that she wanted that this whole art world. It is an art.
Yes,
and you want to take that into consideration that hey. You know, even me, who is doing something, who totally shouldn't be doing it, discrediting everything there is about this art form, you should still take it seriously because you're not. I can discredit because I'm that artist.
Yeah.
Right? You're not the artist, so don't fucking discredit the art. And that's the kind of world that they're in.
Yeah.
Not as strong as the next movie we're going to review, but at the same time, that's as much as I can get from this.
Yeah, I mean, there's actually scenes that back up different things too, because like a bunch of times in the movie, maybe not a bunch, like twice, it's mentioned offhand, sometimes really upfront, about that it's not sexy enough, what she wants to write about. It's not, you know, it's not viable. It's money. It's not about the you know, it's not only right. about the quality she of the work.
She doesn't care about right. the money purpose. She cares about, well, this should be done.
Right. And that I have the ability to do it. Why can't I do it? Give me the money to do it. Right. That's what she wants. I get it. But at the same time, I don't see the fault of the agent also who wants to have a fucking payable thing. Something to monetize
right
over.
There can be a middle ground somewhere,
right? And ideally you want that. And then when they mentioned the Tom Clancy stuff, you know, she mentions you know, well, the three reasons she can't make the price book is the second one. She says that, well, Tom Clancy, for all his faults, whatever,
plays the game, yeah.
plays the game, knows yeah. how to play the game, knows how, goes through every book signing, goes through everything, it does everything, you know, that's why he's there, you know, stuff like that. He puts in the work. And she's not willing to do that. That's her fault. She only wants her work to speak for herself when that is not a possibility.
In true artist form.
In fact.
She wants her work to speak for herself. Right. And people should appreciate that. And people should know that her right. work is, since it speaks for itself, there should be no reason why I should come down to you and ask you for the same amount of insane money of this guy.
Right.
But in the real world, that doesn't work.
Yeah, you gotta be fucking, can't be mean like this.
Right. You're that person who is that person. Is few and far between in comparison to the Tom Clancy's of the world. Right.
And I think that example is perfectly like shown on her. Like the time that I think the moment she notices the real impact of not behaving that way anymore is when the exterminator guy and Jack come into her apartment and they smell the smell, and she hasn't noticed that smell because she's been living there. Oh, the smell of the cat turds and God knows whatever she has, she, all the stuff her apartment smells like, and how bad she feels about it, and how important it is to do those things. I mean, not just for yourself, but like also, I mean, not just for others, but for yourself. And that goes a long way. I think that's the moment it hits her that she can't just fucking be an asshole, just to be an asshole.
Yeah.
Or let the work speak for itself without putting the work in of fucking right. talking to others and shit.
Right, exactly.
So, but yeah, we liked it.
Yeah.
So Can You Ever Forgive Me is... might come back. I don't think it's big enough to come back in theaters.
No, Indie for sure. Indie theaters, it'll be there.
Maybe. But it's all available to buy or rent on iTunes and whatnot. So check it out there if you're interested. We're going to take another break, and when we come back, we'll review our last movie of the evening, a Netflix original movie, Velvet Buzzsaw. Stay with us.
Critique is so limiting and emotionally draining. I'm hoping you find something to explain what's happening.
Which one's better, one or two? Better, worse, no different.
No different.
I'm quite curious to know what you think.
I think sober hasn't been good for him.
Pierce was in the full bloom of alcoholism here.
Exactly.
Never should have quit drinking.
No originality. No courage. My opinion.
I can't save you.
I found something.
Who did these? Mesmeric.
A guy upstairs. He died.
And you just took them?
He had no family or friends.
I can make you rich.
It's brilliant.
Demand has people ready to kill.
Have you ever heard of an artisan Ventral D's?
No, not in our records, and we have everyone.
The artist used blood to create the reddish blocks.
You ever notice anything about this painting? You look at it long enough, it moves.
The art world is set aflame when a new artist, recently deceased, is discovered with over 1,000 paintings that share an unlikely quality in the way they're made and in the way it affects the people that sees them. This is Velvet Buzzsaw. Just made that up. Let's see here. A movie starring Jake Gyllenhaal, Rene Russo, Zoe Ashton, I'm not sure how to pronounce her name, Tom Sturridge, Toni Collette, Natalia Dyer, David Diggs, John Malkovich, some of the people there, Nietzsche, oh my God, I cannot pronounce the name, I am so sorry, All right. This is written and directed by Dan Gilroy. Basically, the team, Dan Gilroy being with Jake Gyllenhaal and Rene Russo, team up again. They did Nightcrawler together. They're back again for this movie, a Netflix original, which you can find it now anytime you want. What did you think of the way I described the synopsis? Because
I read it. I read IMDb.
It's bad, right? It's too much, right?
I mean, yeah, I guess.
I mean, considering I knew nothing and I went in there discovering that, it wasn't immediate to me.
Yes, I agree. So I agree with you in that aspect, yes.
Right.
But overall, for the movie, I can see why the synopsis is
I guess so, yeah.
But yeah, I didn't know nothing about this movie.
Thank God I never read it before I saw the movie. So, I started last time, but essentially this is a stranger movie than the usual foray that we dealt with. So Ralph, what did you think of this movie? Maybe first impressions? This might be a movie that might be hard to digest at first.
Yeah.
But what did you think?
I'll give you first impressions. Starting off, I felt very... to this movie because it was very posh, very the type of people I've ignored
very
my whole
arrogant,
life.
Very arrogant. Selfish, kind of like up.
I felt like that guy who was working on things,
like,
and he's still an artist.
Yeah.
But he's the one setting up everything at the same time. And I'm still an artist too. Recognize me.
He was annoying to me. Though.
He was annoying to me as well. But I felt like that guy. Like that's the closest person I can relate to.
Yeah, first 20 minutes, I'm like, let go of my ego.
Yeah, it was bad. But as you progress through the movie, you see what's going on. I actually liked the whole like mysterious thing going on in the movie. I thought Jake Gyllenhaal playing a gay man is really cool, or bisexual. Man is pretty cool.
Yeah, he's definitely ambisexual or something.
Yeah, metrosexual. I don't know whatever the word is anymore. Bisexual, I would say, right?
I guess that's one way.
Yeah. Anyways, so his persona is great, especially the opening. You get a lot who he is.
More importantly, then, though, I think his intro is really great because not only do you think that he's the main star, but also like you get a lot about him based on how others react around him.
Yeah, that's true.
Almost entirely about his reactions.
Yeah,
like everyone's reactions to him. I'm sorry. Like he'll look at something be like seemingly not. Importantly, but everyone's waiting for him to say something. Oh, the way people react around, tiptoe around him, or you know, gloat to him, or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Those who know him exactly.
Right.
Right. So overall, I like the stuff that's going on in the movie. I thought it was fun. I wish I had a little bit more, but the story wants to mainly focus on the characters and not the actual thing itself. For these newfound paintings.
Would you call this a mystery? Is this movie a mystery to you?
Well, it's a mystery of why it's happening or how it happens at first, right? Mm-hmm. That's the mystery part of it. And then afterwards, once we figure out the mystery, the characters, not the audience, because the audience already knows. The characters, once the characters figure out the mystery, I guess it's...
It's like 80% a mystery. 80% of the movie is a mystery.
Yeah, it's not a horror movie.
But it almost is. It's almost like it's
I don't know.
An art movie disguised as a horror movie, or the other way around, a horror movie disguised as an art movie. That's probably better.
Yeah.
Because it does have some scenes for sure, and some of them are like cliche horror movie scenes too.
Horrendously.
As soon as they're left alone in a room, they're dead, and we know they are about to be dead.
Well, also the one scene. This is like your typical investigation into going to the next thing scene where the horror is going to happen or whatever.
Yes.
I'm finding out is when they go talk to that one guy who used to work with the painter. And he's like, we all knew not to mess with the guy.
Right.
That one scene is just like, I've seen this in every horror movie ever.
Right. Like, it is. I've seen that actor probably do the same fucking... He looks...
Yes.
I know. Hold I recognize
on.
That guy.
I'm going to pull up that actor.
I recognize that guy. I know he's done this before.
Yes.
He's the guy who will give exposition about an evil, shady character
when
you go visit his history. Like, that's him. He plays that guy really well.
100% agree.
Yeah. We're going to find out. We're going to blow the lid on this guy and find out he's a serial killer.
Stephen Williams, VA janitor. And yes, actually, I think he plays in one of the Freddy Krueger movies. I'll look him up, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Jason Goes to Hell. That's
Jason
one.
Goes to. That's right. That's right. And he was from some older thing. Okay, yep. Cool. Yes, that's right.
Uh-huh. He plays the main guy who goes after Jason.
Is that him? Yes. Yeah. My God, so many Jason movies. A lot of them are really bad. Okay. So, are you done with your initial? I'm sorry.
Essentially, when you get to everything, I overall liked it. I thought I was at this point. At that point, I was just like, "Ooh, how's this next thing gonna happen?" Mm-hmm. So I did like it overall. It was just very pretentious in the beginning.
I mean, pretentious the whole time, but right. it just has more to it.
Nothing was spectacular. I just liked that it was. I didn't know what was going to happen, and I didn't know it was like wrapped around this nice little present wrapped around, and you're like, oh, that's what this movie is, mm-hmm. and that's what I overall enjoyed about the movie.
Yes, my first impressions are I'm still wrestling through this movie. I saw it less than 24 hours ago, and I'm wrestling through it because I first sure liked it a lot, but I'm wrestling to it if whether or not this is a movie I want to revisit. Not because it's bad or anything, but because, well, I'll explain in a bit. But a movie that I want to revisit, I don't know if I want to yet. And I don't know if I love this movie or not. I know I really like it. I don't know if I love it yet. And the reason is because I'm not sure what to make of what's happening in this movie 100%. I know that whatever that is or whatever conclusion I come up with, I will be satisfied. And I won't blame the movie like in a bad way, but it'll determine whether or not A, I would rewatch this movie or feel the need to, or would like love to recommend it or make it top 10 thing or whatever the hell. Or make it a movie that I love, capital okay. L. It's close. I just don't know where it is. And I really enjoyed the beginning because I did not know where this movie was going to go. The beautiful thing about this movie is that, and also why I don't know if I want to rewatch it, is that the whole thing hinges on not knowing what's going to happen next.
Yes.
Not just in the horror aspects, but in the very beginning, you don't know whose story this is. You think it's Jake Gyllenhaal. And for a while, you do believe that. But like, they are discovering new artists. They're talking about older artists that have lost their flame that might get their flame back. You don't know if it is about finding the next big artist thing or if it's about the value of critique and critic writing. You don't know if it's the value, because the movie has all this stuff in there. And the whole time, you're clearly asking questions about the art world and how cliche it is and how they strive for originality, but they constantly live in everything that looks completely unoriginal, and the way they flourish yeah. themselves with money over originality. The biases of their own making is yeah. there, and it makes us arrogant and kind of annoying to watch sometimes. But also, not realistic because I don't know the art world that way, but it feels like they're of a piece. It's a culture for them.
It is, yeah.
That's their own 1%. Yeah. That's the 1%, right?
You know, the movie kind of reminds me of Scream.
Ooh, please do tell.
And it's just who's going to get it next.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yes.
And yeah. that aspect.
I know.
You're reminds
right.
me a lot of that.
Yeah.
Now, thinking about it, like, I had the whole inkling the whole time I was watching the movie, and I was like, what does this remind me of? And I never got it until just, I guess it just clicked right now. And it reminds me of Scream. Just, like, who's going to get it next, essentially.
Yes.
Continue my apologies.
And the movie takes a while to get there, too. It opens up.
It really does.
Like, you really, like, even when the painting, because the paintings, so I should say, one of the main actors, probably a lot of people would consider the main actress of the movie, Josefina. Who plays yeah. like a second tier to this
she's
art,
like
a art gallery.
Broker in training.
In training or something like that, right. For this art gallery who is owned by Rene Russo's character, Rodora Hayes. Great fucking art name, by the way. And Josefina discovers in her apartment flat complex building, discovers the dead person of this shut-in agoraphobic painter who died outside his door. Discovers him, goes into his place, and discovers that this man, for the last, what, they mentioned like 2-3 decades,
yeah.
been painting nonstop. Painting paintings in different sizes. Some of them, they feel like different styles, by the way. And about different things entirely. But all of them have this same morose, kind of overall serious feel and tone. I don't know how to describe it. I am not an art critic. But if you watch the movie, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And his house is filled with a perfectly shut-in behavior, you know, a fucking, what do you call it, when people stack stuff, hoarder, big-time hoarder, newspapers everywhere, the classic serial killer kind of then,
yeah.
but he's not a serial killer, he's just the paintings. And you find out two very key things. One, that obviously she takes the work and tries to immediately get success, fame, money out of this man's work, because she knows, as so will the art world momentarily, the importance of this man's work, right? That's one. And two is that she finds out pretty early on, we as the audience do, that the man and his dying wish asked for his paintings to be burned and destroyed, everything to be destroyed, none of it to be, you know, sold anywhere or given to anyone, not for free, not for money, not for nothing. And that is key for the rest of the movie. And it felt like key for the movie. I just didn't know why at the time. It felt like there was a good reason, but I didn't know idea. If all I know, this is
the movie does a really good job of disguising everything. All I know, he hid like
code breaking stuff behind the paintings that could be revealed for. I don't know. It could be anything. Yeah. This movie is really good about keeping everything fresh, and that's the power of this movie. Not unlike Nightcrawler, by the way, but Nightcrawler is more point and shoot. But this one does do a lot to kind of show it where you don't know who the main actor is, and that goes a long way of preserving the mystery of Velvet Buzzsaw. Also, the title. What do you think of the title and why it's titled that? I mean, it's a spoilery. In case we can.
I don't know. I think it's like it was the name of the band or her artist name before.
It is the name of a handle or the collective that Rene Russo's character was a part of when she was an up and rising star artist in the 80s, doing her punk phase. Uh-huh. And she has a tattoo that we see early on of a saw. And saying Velvet Buzzsaw on it.
Yeah.
So the first time I saw that is that I'm like, is she secretly the main actress of this movie?
That's what I thought so too.
I had many thoughts, man. Yeah. I thought that, or I thought, you know, some titles are purposely weird for being weird or whatever.
That or she maybe was going to be our, or she's destined to be our, what's it called?
The hero that lives?
Yeah. Or heroine like or something.
Or someone that
figures the out. One or the one who lives the tale.
Or the one villain.
Or, yeah.
You don't know. You
exactly.
Don't know. I told you about
there's
that.
There's a lot of stuff. Yeah. I told you the same here.
Yeah. So it could be anything. And again, the great thing about this movie, if you're interested in watching it, before we get to spoilers, I would say that watch it knowing that even though we did say some things already, it's a movie that unfolds. You don't know where it's going. And it's really cool that way. I mean, we did spoil that it was kind of a horror movie, but I'm sure if you've seen one trailer or even one fucking look at it, at the poster, it looks that way. So not the hugest spoiler there. But yeah. Check it out. I think we both recommend it, right?
Yeah. At least one view. Yeah. One view of it. I mean, I'm just not saying like, how's this? If my wife had asked me to sit down and watch it with her, I would be like, yeah, okay. And if I fall asleep, I wouldn't be off. But if I saw the whole thing, I wouldn't be put off either.
Yeah, so I watched it also with my girlfriend. Well, not wife, but in this case. But
I haven't seen it with her. But
yeah. And she was watching. She was doing her own thing on her phone, on her computer. I was like, I have to watch this movie. I have to review it tomorrow. And I started watching it. 20-30 minutes in, she was into it. Like, she ignored her phone. She ignored everything. She was like completely into it with me. It's like, what's happening? Why is she doing that? Why is she going there?
Oh, you have an asker in your audience asking what's going on in the movie when you're clearly revealed.
She does. And I'm always like, I haven't seen it. I'm watching it. I'm discovering it
together, right?
Yeah. But we both like started like giving each other theories on what's going on. So that was cool.
That is
like,
cool.
Oh, like, oh, she's going to do this. And I'm like, she's like, no, she's going to do this. Whatever.
Yeah, I usually do that in my own mind.
So before we get into the spoiler territory here, I'm just going to say poor Coco.
Yeah.
Believe it or not, that's the one character I felt the most sorry about. Probably because she is the nicest and the least corrupted and most genuine character, because this movie is filled with a bunch of arrogant people that don't have it coming necessarily, but you feel less bad about than Coco. So,
you do.
Spoilers for Velvet Buzzsaw starting right now.
As I research these, I'm starting to think
there's a disgust for the world of money.
You spent decades in a psychiatric hospital for the criminally insane.
Some sort of power. Some spirit. It's connected to his art. Something truly goddamn strange is going on!
This is a slaughterhouse.
Are you aware that Dee's asked that all his art be destroyed?
Help! Get rid of it. Box it off.
I can't save you.
People thought she was part of an exhibit.
We're trending on Instagram. It's a major hit.
They die.
They all fucking die.
They all fucking die.
They all die.
Yeah.
Everyone dies in this movie, bro.
But everyone except dies who was, who took a piece of him.
I think that's what it is?
That's what it was.
Yeah.
It was like a curse. Like his paintings were a curse or something. So, anybody that took a piece from it or that profited from him took died.
So yeah, so this is a surprising little element that I didn't think about when I read the Netflix, oh not the Netflix, the IMDb synopsis. In the synopsis it says, after a series of paintings by an unknown artist are discovered, a supernatural force enacts revenge on those who have allowed their greed to get in the way of art. That is too specific. That is giving us the motive for why the paintings attack and kill people.
Yeah, but we never...
I didn't think of that.
I didn't think of that either.
I'm not saying that the greed had nothing to do with it, but I thought it was something completely different.
Yeah.
The whole time. Still to this day. I mean, still to this minute, I mean. And so that threw me off. Yeah. I'm like, are they conclusively saying that? You know, I kind of...
I guess so. Who wrote the thing?
Some IMDb. I don't know. You can check it, I guess. I just thought that was interesting that there is a purpose, or maybe in the screenwriter way, Dan Gilroy did have a reason. Did have a reason in his mind, but it looks like it's just the person who wrote the synopsis, that's their point of view why the paintings were killing things. But I think there are multiple interpretations.
I'm going to read you Netflix.
Oh, yeah. Read me Netflix.
Well, I'll pull it up. Keep talking.
Oh, okay. I'm talking. Talking about this and talking about that. No. I really love how I think Dan Gilroy likes putting Jake Gyllenhaal in movies where he is constantly showing very expressively anger or very expressive depression. Like, he does that really well. The eyes bulge and everything. Nightcrawler did that happen to a couple times. But he builds
this. This is the synopsis you should have read. A feared critic, an icy gallery owner, and an ambitious assistant snap up a recently deceased artist's stash of paintings with dire consequences.
Ah!
That's a fucking synopsis right there.
That's a way better one. Yeah. Whatever.
And this is the best cover for this movie ever. And it's Jake Gyllenhaal's face. Sorry.
Dude, just staring at you.
Well, I like IMDb's too, but I like this one too. Cause it's just
I love the lines. They gave him the best lines, by the way.
They did give him the best lines.
Every comeback he had.
I just like, because this is a good acting gig for Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah.
Because he has nothing action-y, nothing crazy. It's just all his deliverance, his...
tone.
Demeanor, his tone, everything. It's yeah. a lot of stuff going on, subtle stuff, but things that you're not used to seeing Jake Gyllenhaal. You're like, oh, I forgot you're a good actor, you know, because you're just Prince of Persia. Like,
oh man, that's the movie.
No, it's not the movie, but I'm just saying. Prince of Persia.
No, you're right though. That's the one you think of.
That is not the one I think of.
But that's the one you thought of.
That's the one that I wanted to say.
Okay. So many ways to go about this review, but I want to say, what do you think the movie is trying to say about art? I mean, the movie feels like it's saying a lot of negative things about art. I think the movie is very biased against art people, maybe not art itself,
yeah,
but people themselves. Because if the premise of the IMDb thing is right,
I think the movie wants to say a lot of there's both ways that you can, there's a lot of ways you can take art, and art is in the art can be something that's appreciated now, art can be something that's appreciated forever, art that's something, it's there's a lot of things going on. But what I think what the movie is kind of saying right then and there is that art is all about, at least this type of art, art is all about the now. Like, mm-hmm. And now it's big and we have to capitalize it. And it's weird that capitalism, right, lives in art, like surrounds art to make sure make it be this amazing thing, right? As I right. say, giving it that price tag, giving it that huge price tag, or giving it this, you know, notoriety and giving it all these best reviews and showing it the limelight gives it its reason for it to be art and be life or timeless.
It's like you know, weird. Something that costs more, because it costs more, it has more value,
right.
Literally.
It's,
but they're saying that making that price tag huge makes it more than just literally valuable. It makes it legendarily valuable or something like prestige valuable.
Yeah, and it also shows it's like
the
this,
only time.
It's like this weird thing of like giving recognition to artists who are alive. Because a lot of these people who are doing art are these people who are alive.
Yes.
Except for the recently deceased artist who they have all their
Which
work.
Happens every once in a while.
It does.
I mean, there's a documentary that came out of Chicago about that photographer that died a long time ago, and all her photographs were discovered, and they're amazing.
Yeah.
You know, but everything happened post her death.
Yeah.
I forgot the name of them.
Sure, it does happen like that. What I'm saying is that, it's now it's rarer for that to happen, right?
Definitely.
Now it's all about what's happening now. And I think that's what it is. It's like, well, you know, if art Da Vinci sold his shit for $10 back in his day or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, why? I know that my work is as was Da Vinci's, but now they sell for millions. Why can't I sell mine for millions? Or, you know, stuff like that. If you want to look at it like that. That's one way of seeing that the weird thing of art, of like giving it props. But I also see it as in like just thinking about it now and kind of reading that IMDb synopsis with the greediness of it.
Yeah.
Saying that since it's a dead person, no one profits from it except for the people selling it or people who have the people who get who have the stock.
Yeah.
So the one who's profiting it is Rene Russo mainly because she has all of it, right?
Yeah, she's the queen.
She's giving a big cut to
Queen Gallery.
The, what's her name? Penelope, right? The
Josefina.
Josefina, my apologies.
Well, I was way off.
Who cares? Josefina, and then giving it to Jake Gyllenhaal's character. What the hell is his name in the Morph.
Morph. I love his name. Morph.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, giving it to Morph, giving him a cut for the exclusiveness of it, right? So I just had a lot of stuff going on in the movie,
yeah,
essentially. But it's this weird, like, I need to capitalize. We need to capitalize it now and worry about the later.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all about what pushes art or what is it.
Well, I mean, that even, there's some shady stuff even art. In the beginning. Like, for example, before that one installer guy was going to steal the stuff. I mean, her plan was to seal off like 70% of the guy's work and for a rainy day or for to bring up more, you know, because there's these guys, name is these. He is hot right now, but
by the way,
good to save
that these guy,
the diamond.
Sounds like an artist.
Yeah.
Sounds like a dead artist.
Sounds like Matisse, who is a dead artist. And, you know, she was shady from the beginning. And then there's a few points when they show true colors of people. The whole movie throughout, I think everyone changes how we perceive them as audience members and how some of the characters perceive them, too, because they're best friends. They've known each other in this business for such a long time.
And
except for Jake Gyllenhaal.
I think the only person who could have gotten away without dying was Jake Gyllenhaal. Had he not done what he did, and that's the only reason he dies.
Which is, we're trying to hide the paintings?
Yes.
Huh. So, I have a question about that. Because okay. So, do you think that the original owner, Dees, he died because he tried burning the paintings? That's why he died, you think? He was in the middle of burning them.
Yeah.
When he died, right?
Right.
So it's logical to follow, to assume that the paintings killed him, or whatever the power he put in there.
Yeah, that's the only thing I can't account for, but from what I understand is that his greed of not wanting to share the art killed him.
Oh, so you think it's a different kind of greed?
I think it's not wanting to share the art, or him not keeping the art, or him not wanting to be the art, you know, not sharing it, or not doing whatever he was to do it before when he made the art. He obviously was giving up on the art. He either didn't care for it or was afraid of it or something to this.
See, there's a
lot of stuff going on there. So, I know.
So here's the thing.
But the thing is, like, if we're going, and I hate this whole like greed thing that we were installed in. But if we're going in the part that it gets everybody who's trying to profit from it, right? Maybe that's what was happening. He was about to profit from it or something, and the art killed him. And
but he wasn't. He.
We don't know that, though.
He started off that way. Right. I mean, he started off like I love his Morph is my favorite person because throughout the whole movie, he doesn't change for the worse.
Right.
Everyone else does.
Yeah.
I think for Coco, but Coco's a side character. Morph doesn't change for. He's honest from his first impressions of seeing the first Dees to the moment he dies.
Yeah.
By the way, getting killed by the hobo man, horrible way to go.
Oh, once I saw the hobo man, I was like...
And that was creepy.
Super creepy. Once I saw him, and I was like, ooh, I knew this was coming back to bite you in the ass.
And I love that scene a lot because it was juxtaposing three of the main actors, the three left, and who would die. And you think that it will be just one, but it ends up being two. And at some point, you think it's all three, but only one makes it out.
Right.
And that was amazing because I didn't think they would kill because at first I was thinking
because Morph you felt like Morph
was happening
himself.
What's going on
everything
right
was, yeah.
Morph found out he was the first to address all this problem and try to fix it so I thought that he would understand and get out of it, but no, it turned out that no, and this is what we're going to talk about in a second, like why he got killed. And it was this girl who got out, and that's when my theory from earlier on busked like crazy, because I'm like, oh shit, she understands how putting your literal blood and guts into this fucking in your work leads to this kind of power, and she might be the only one that understands that because of the Velvet Buzzsaw. Yeah. That's why I thought it was
I just think it's like him not the art is meant to be shown.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And it's meant to be not taken advantage of or whatever. There's a bunch of things that you can add on to this, right? But I think overall the art's meant to be shown.
Yeah.
Right? And I think since the artist started burning them, he gets killed for it. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Morph starts putting them away, he gets killed for it. He's taking the guy's taking him away to the storage unit, he gets killed for it. Right?
Yeah.
What's it called? What's her name? Rainey Russo's character gets rid of all her stuff.
But she was gonna get killed for it anyway.
Huh?
She was gonna get killed for it anyway.
Right, that's the only thing.
And that's not the and
well, that's the only one that's like doesn't account for what I'm saying. But
I mean, well, I do love her reaction. They're like, okay, she sees the proof in the pudding right then. Like, get rid of every piece of art in my house.
Yeah.
Except that she forgot to cut off her own skin.
Yeah.
That's the only problem. That was cool, though. Because I didn't know how Velvet Buzzsaw would come into play like that.
Yeah.
I didn't think it would be to her own demise.
Right.
That was cool. That was a big surprise for me. You're like, oh, my. And when I started bleeding, I'm like, oh, God, it's going to spin and kill her. And it did.
And it did.
I almost thought they were going to go along and show it, but they didn't. But it's enough. So I don't know. See, at first, I'm thinking that the reason Morph was killed is because the paintings want to be shown. They want to spread fear and whatever. I'm basing that on because they killed their owner, Dees, when he tried to burn them.
Oh, right?
So everyone who comes into contact and shows greed, I guess. I'm not going to say greed, but shows their true colors, let's say, or owns them at all. I think would get killed by them, but they don't want to be destroyed. So I think that maybe that counts for why Morph was killed, which accounts why Dees was killed.
Yes.
And everyone in between.
Yeah.
So I guess I can go with that.
Okay.
But you know the other street artist, David Diggs, he gets out of it. He was staring at those paintings for a long time, but he never owned one. He wanted one.
He never owned one, but he walked away from it because he was like,
He walked away with it once one of them started hallucinating. Oh, he started seeing more.
Yeah.
The fire, right? The campfire one. That's when he went back to his collective and said, fuck you people, I'm going back to street art, right? And probably because it scared him, but he got out of it.
He left and he left like for good intention, like almost like, I can't compete with that. That shit's freaky. I won't be around that shit. Yeah. Bye.
Yeah.
And he left.
Yeah.
Exactly. And then the other guy, what's his name? John Malkovich's character.
Who
just happened to be away from it all.
Yes.
And he needed to be away from it all. And actually, I like that ending.
I like that ending, too.
Because I was like, what's going on? This looks really cool. And I was like, oh, that's awesome.
He's just like meditating. He's never, practicing.
Probably not, until he gets back, he's not to know anything.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Because he's completely isolated.
Isolated.
I love the old painter.
Yeah.
Trying to get back into the swing of things. Writer's block in a way. We think of, can you forgive me? Yeah, that was really cool. And they sent him away. And I did forget all about him until they showed him in the ending credits. That was cool. And Coco leaving immediately after discovering Morph's body. And she says, oh, fuck me. Remember? Yeah. That was a great comeback. That was a great line.
Yeah.
So all in all is that I don't know 100% as to what this movie's trying to say other than...
I forgot about that guy who wants to do harm to the paintings also. Give it less notoriety than it is from a dead person that's all stolen. The one competing broker, the one competing.
Yeah, everyone gets hanged.
Yeah.
Yes.
I forgot about that guy.
Yeah, he does some of the research background stuff that I really. The thing is that this movie also does a good job of us wanting to know so much about this artist. You find out so little, and then you find out more, and it's creepier and fucked up. And then that one lady who was doing the restoration lady was doing the analysis on what the painting's made out of.
Right.
And discovers that's made out of tissue, blood, and all this stuff. And I'm like, it feels like like some archaic form of like, I don't know, like, what's that science called? Remember Kronos?
No, I never saw it. I never seen Kronos. Sorry.
Fuck. Necromancy. Not necromancy. That's not a real one. It's
alchemy.
Alchemy. Thank you. It's like some sort of alchemy thing where like this old form of like some sort of witch artifact.
Yeah.
It's like a witch artifact. Yeah. You know, like this, he imbues so much of his own hatred and horrible life and all the testing they described when they were going to the testing of what this man went through. I'm like, oh my god, they made Frankenstein's monster. That's what they literally did.
Yeah.
And in like a chorus, right?
Yeah.
So it's so fascinating, but I don't know exactly where it puts everything. And I think showing that, the fact that everyone dies except for one kind of assistant that moves back to Michigan and one older artist that happens to get away at the right time, and that street artist. Other than those three characters, who are all side characters.
True artists.
You maybe, would say. Maybe, except for Coco. Yeah.
Pure?
Yeah. Yes, pure, right? Just pure person. I don't know. Maybe it's like a... Maybe the movie's trying to get rid of what used to... What is considered to be high art or high art dealers and high art retailers or high artists. Get rid of them and start anew. Kind of feels like that too, maybe. But the movie ends in an ominous kind of way where, you know, those homeless people did steal the art.
Yeah,
they right?
did. Yeah.
And they were selling it. And who do you think is in trouble? The couple that bought it or the guy who just sold it?
It looked like the guy who sold it.
Is in trouble?
It looked. But at the same time, it looks like he just doesn't care and he's trying to make a living.
Mm-hmm.
And
he sold it for $5.
He sold it for $5.
Yeah, that's crazy.
I like how he looks at it. He's like, oh, $5?
Yeah.
And they're like, yes!
Yeah, it looked great.
Yeah.
So that's my other question, is that did this movie depict a convincing masterpieces or a series of masterpieces?
For the you? Stuff that I saw all looked like just very cool, detailed, depicting a moment in life.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's what I liked about it, because every piece that they showed, they gave a little background history to it.
Yeah.
So with the little background history of it, it showed like, oh, I can see it why. And I'm like, yeah, I do appreciate that. That does look cool art. It does look like good art. Or what I would consider good art.
I would say that's the real connection between all of them, is that they all tend to show a moment. Yeah. They just freeze a moment.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And everything that that moment means to the painter, probably.
Right, exactly.
And what do you think of that old man? Is that the painter?
I guess. Because
he showed a lot. Or it could be the father of the painter that originally abused him. To start
I don't
off,
know.
Though.
I thought it was him.
Right.
Himself it could be him, as an old man also, but... I could be wrong.
Or it could be the Ghostbusters 2 sequel, the painting.
Oh,
you know,
God. Right, no, I did think about that.
I did think of that once, yes, I did.
Especially when one of the paintings bleeds.
Yes, yes, yeah.
It was like ooze. Sorry.
Ooze, right, yeah, the slime.
The slime,
slime,
yeah.
Right. Anyway, I think that's all I have on Velvet Buzzsaw.
I had
now.
Fun with it
for
overall.
Now.
I did have fun with it overall.
Yes.
It is. Get over that little 20 minutes of the first of the movie. That's
no, but it does really help.
But it does. Yeah. But it does help. No. Yeah. Get over it as in like... This isn't what the movie actually is.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So that's Velvet Buzzsaw, available on Netflix right now. And that is it for our show. You have been listening to another movie podcast. And one crucial thing we forgot to do, Ralph, off air, is to decide what the next movies are going to be.
Oh, shit.
For the review. It's your turn. So you're going to, we'll figure that out tonight.
No, it's fine.
And we'll, you're going to figure it out right now. You're just going to do it right now.
Yeah.
Okay. As I talk here, you can follow me personally on Letterboxd for my movie watching habits, as well as on Twitter. Both under the same name, Armin Filmmaker, which is Filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. You can also follow Luke, who is our other co-host. If you listen to previous shows, you know who he is. He is Slothmaster Luke on Twitter. Ralph, you want to give out your shit?
Yeah. You could follow me on Twitter at GamerRalph with two R's and an F.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about
You don't Twitch anymore, right?
No, I rarely do it, so...
We said we were going to do something. What was the thing?
Actually, we're going to try to do RE2.
RE2, right. Yeah, I'm almost done with Prey, mm-hmm. And then I want to get into that for sure. So you don't have to pick all of them. You could pick one, and then we could decide the rest or whatever. It doesn't have to be...
Yeah, I'm looking at
we
other...
We often change, by the way. You know.
I'm looking at other... I think Greta's too late.
Greta? I don't know that one.
Listen, I'm going to end up watching How to Train Your Dragon regardless, because I have to. But I don't want
to... Why do you have to?
My son.
Oh, okay.
Take kids, it to the movies.
Kids movie, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you could out, man. We did a children's movie today.
We did. You're not wrong.
Right?
Yeah.
You can just keep that trend going.
When's the next?
I don't know.
Yeah, it's not much going on.
That's all right. We'll figure it out. Don't worry about it. We don't want to stay on the air.
Yeah, you're right.
All right. All right, cool, guys. So stay with us. I'll see you guys in 2 weeks. Till then, I'm Oscar. You are?
Ralph.
Lates.
Look, everything in this world is running exactly on schedule. Besides, to leave, we probably have to wait until the movie's over or something.
Well, when is that gonna happen?